Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We're talking about the Billy Meier case this afternoon. There's a very interesting article on the Future of Mankind website. It's entitled, Why Is It Important to Learn So Much? And this is from an article. It's written by Marianne Eulinger. Marianne has decided not to be a core member of FIGU. Instead, at the time of what's called the Great Oath, her personality decided on a different kind of help. Her story is described in more detail in Contact Report 235. Her name at that time was Exandala, which means the conscientious one. At that time, out of her own free will, she committed herself to the fulfillment of the mission and to the appropriate assistance of the same, but without being a core member of the group. One of the things that she quoted in this article was a section from the Goblet of Truth. And this passage basically tells us that if we're not prepared in the teaching of the Spirit and the teaching of life, then we should not decide to spread the teaching of the Spirit. It's an interesting challenge indeed. I wanted to move on just to a second to death and the spirit form. After death, the spirit form and the consciousness block pass over into their respective levels in order to process the accumulated data. So when the spirit form leaves the body, it goes into another realm, into a dimension that's adjacent to ours, so to speak. And the content of the consciousness block is downloaded into the storage banks of the overall consciousness block. So the consciousness block, you could think of as your material consciousness, your personality, your subconsciousness, your conscious mind, your unconscious. All of this is downloaded in the spiritual realm into this larger area called the overall consciousness block. And all this data, in reality, this data, they're impulses of the consciousness block programs. And this includes the consciousness, the memory of the consciousness and the subconsciousness, the personality. All this goes into the storage banks of the overall consciousness. So what you have learned from previous life is placed into the memory of the subconsciousness. Now this is when the new personality is created. See, in the overall consciousness block, when your spirit form is in the spiritual realm, after you physically died, the experiences of the material consciousness are processed into a kind of energy. So we retain the experiences of the previous life, and those experiences are stored in the subconsciousness when the new personality is created. So spirit form comes out of the body, and with it comes the consciousness block, the personality, the subconsciousness, the unconsciousness. All this goes into this area in the spiritual realm called the overall consciousness block, where your past life memories are processed. And eventually, what's of evolutive value is then stored in the subconscious memory when the new personality is created, when the new consciousness block is created. And what's of evolutive value somehow strengthens the spirit form and gives it more energy. So each one of these evolutive cycles of life and death gives the spirit form more energy and more power if you have evolved your consciousness in the previous life. So the essence of all knowledge, experience, and wisdom from our predecessor personalities is loaded into the new memory of the subconsciousness. Remember, the spirit form in between lives is processing the experiences from the previous life, turning those experiences into evolutive values, and then eventually the new personality is formed in the spirit realm, and the spirit form is literally kind of pulled into the appropriate fetus at 21 days, and this is a natural thing that occurs. So in the time of overpopulation, sometimes the spirit forms get pulled right into the fetus when they haven't had enough time in the spirit realm. And this is why there's sometimes an imbalance that occurs during times of large population, and like we have now. And this is one of the reasons that overpopulation is a bad thing, is because it creates not only problems in the material world, but problems in the immaterial spiritual side, where the spirit forms get drawn too quickly into a material life again. And you're supposed to spend about a lifetime and a half in the spiritual realm. Remember, in the spiritual realm, the spirit form is processing the previous life memories, converting what was valuable for evolution into a kind of neutral energy, which strengthens the spirit form. And when the new personality is created, when the new consciousness block is created, these previous life memories are stored in the subconscious. So you will get impulses and inspiration from your subconsciousness in the next life. And those impulses can be coming from the previous personality. The body itself, as well as the consciousness, are animated by what's called an impulsating spirit energy. That's your spirit form. Plants also, believe it or not, have a spirit form. Everything in the entire universe is composed of moving impulses or impulsations, including all cells. An impulse can be defined as a driving or a motivating force, an impetus. An impulse can be a psychic drive. It can be an instinctual urge. An impulse can also be called a force. And an impulse you can think of as a signal. So an impulse can be something that causes motion, something to produce a motion suddenly. So we're getting impulses from our previous lives, and we're getting impulses from the storage banks, the planetary storage banks. So the key is to be sensitive and aware enough to be able to be influenced by these impulses. Now, one of the problems that stops us from being sensitive to these impulses is unsatisfaction. And we human beings are plagued by constant inner conflicts. They senselessly squander our energies, which results in us losing our initiative. And sometimes, you know, we do not have the success that we want in the things that we're working on. And these sometimes deep in our inner selves, we become tired of ourselves. And this is a bad thing. It can lead us into despair. And literally, we can get on our own nerves. We can become bored. And we look at our lives as sometimes being illogical and stupid, insufficient. And what we have to do is take a holiday from our own ego in order to think clearly again. And what I'm kind of communicating to you now is on page 278 of my particular edition of the Mach der Gedanken, the Might of Thoughts, Billy's great book on our thinking. Because our thinking really is what's controlling the circumstances of our lives, although we don't realize that. We see ourselves as being disempowered, but the fact of the matter is, most of the circumstances in your life are really caused by your own thinking. The problem is we have unconscious thoughts that we're not aware of. And then we have thoughts which kind of rotate endlessly, like a broken record, repeating over and over again, which are unhealthy thoughts, which can be very, very bad. And eventually human beings, they feel so dried out and empty that they eventually get to the point where they have a lack of initiative. This is a big problem. People feel paralyzed. They feel like they have no initiative. That's because they've been let themselves become plagued by inner conflicts, and they're brooding these repeated thoughts through their psyche over and over again. And it takes time to get over these things. So the best thing is to be able to learn how you can get yourself back into a neutral state of mind again, a neutral positive state of mind. Unsatisfaction comes from the human being himself or herself. Sometimes it can come through unrealistic expectations, unrealized ideas. Unsatisfaction is devastating and destructive, and it will take you away from your goals and targets in life. It kills all of our initiative towards striving to that which is higher. And we fall into this brooding misery. Let me read something here from the Mind of Thoughts. Additionally, the human being always feels oversaturated on account of his or her thoughts, which overburden him or her in regard, and the resultant feelings of the same kind, as a result of which their psyche is also affected the same way, same wise. But the problem is, once our consciousness is oversaturated, all the creativity goes out of our life. Our ideas are not created. Our ideas are not realized. Unsatisfaction leads to profound loss of creativity and a loss of initiative. So that's one of the things when you're practicing the spiritual teachings, when you're analyzing your own thoughts, look for certain side effects. Am I worn out? Do I have no initiative? That might be coming from you're plagued by inner conflicts and you're having unsatisfaction in your thinking. You can also develop an aversion to your own self. Now, this is very, very strange. We have to look at our inner self, our innermost thoughts, our innermost feelings, our innermost contemplations. That's where we determine what the truth is. People don't realize that today. So you have to learn about your own inner self. However, the human being gets to know him or herself, she starts to discover impulses from our inner nature. We have impulses. Remember, I was talking about those impulsations again. The body itself, as well as the consciousness, are animated by an pulsating spirit energy. And your spirit form will send impulses to your material consciousness. And once those impulses are translated into reality, then slowly unsatisfaction and aversion disappear. Your spirit form is a part of the universal consciousness, basically. It cannot be harmed by anything in the material realm. Your gamut, what's called the gamut, controls the thoughts and the feelings of the spiritual consciousness. Your spirit form is completely, cannot be harmed, no matter how difficult your circumstances in life are. Your spirit form is completely, cannot be harmed by anything in the material realm. So if you have something that you want to focus on and trust on, start evaluating your internal impulses. These impulses can guide you. They're neutral positive. Your spirit form can never go insane. It can never lead you the wrong way. As Semyase said this to Billy, remember Semyase, Billy's third contact, she said that every human has within them a spirit, and the spirit records all of our thoughts, all of our impulsations. It will tell you if your thinking is right or wrong, if you have learned to pay attention to it. The spirit is the bearer of the creative realm. It's the wonder of all wonders. Your spirit form does not die. It does not sleep. It exists through all of your physical lifetimes. And it has a tremendous amount of knowledge associated with it because of your predecessor personalities. So look to your inner nature. To really be able to change for the better in one's own inner nature is absolutely necessary to undergo a thorough self-analysis. Indeed, very intensively. So the spiritual teaching requires us to go through these self-analyses. We should, let me read something to you. This is very interesting. With the entire matter, it is advantageous to not only make a mental picture of the side of oneself, which is the most worthy of love, rather also to see and in fact and also recognize the disagreeable, the negative and negating forms, because that which is good and positive can be built up into something even higher. So we have also, we have very positive aspect to our inner self, but there's also, sometimes we store certain levels of negativity in our inner self. The psyche is colored according to our thoughts. Whatever the human being intensively thinks about, it grows in him or her and eventually becomes fact. Let me repeat that again. Whatever the human being intensively thinks about grows in him or her and eventually becomes fact. That, unfortunately, is a fact that that which is bad and negative, once it created, it does not simply disappear. Rather, it stores itself into the overall consciousness block and into the overall planetary storage banks. So, your negative thinking goes into these storage banks as well. From where the human being can consciously or unconsciously, subconsciously, call it up over and over again. So you can call back your own negative impulses back again and again and again. In the course of different reincarnations. So you can get negative impulses from your previous lives' problems. The human, that's why it's so important, and that's what the whole point of this show was. That's why it's so important to learn as much as we can so we don't keep depositing garbage into the storage banks that's going to come back to us again. Besides, the human being has been exposed through his or her reincarnations over many millennia to the so-called process of civilization, which has furnished him or her with bad, wrong, unhealthy, and negative factors which repeatedly have effect on him or her when he or she is consciously and subconsciously reaches the realms and takes up their impulses. Again, that we get impulses from the universal storage banks. So let's talk about this. Maybe that's a good thing that we can talk about again. What are these storage banks? And I like to go back to when Billy was a very young boy. And he was, you know, it was May, it was a beautiful evening, and suddenly impulses came from somewhere. Billy's a very young boy. He later recognizes these impulses were from the storage banks. And good memories penetrated him and literally showed him the way he had to go in his life. He said, "I recognized that the light which the stars emitted was a light in the visible spectrum. However, the light of true love remained invisible and creational for all great time." Now, true love is said to have its basis in reality, not belief. We're talking about something called wisdom-conditioned love here. Let me read what Billy has to say about love. He says that the earth human being is not evolved enough to be able to create true wisdom-based love within him or herself. He goes on to say only a few human beings on earth are on the threshold of this highest form of wisdom creational love. The majority still lives in the lower forms of false effective love. Is it any wonder, then, that so much goes awry on this planet? If the very growth medium for our evolution is inadequate, fortunately, with enough striving and effort, we can actually begin to learn what love really is, observing the difference between genuine love and false love, which is predominantly practiced on the planet. So on our planet, false love is practiced. This is the romantic love. This is the love that's based on, you know, certain circumstances in life and certain feelings and a person's appearance. And in contrast to false love is the wisdom conditioned love, which is independent of your age, your appearance, your personality. You know, wisdom conditioned love realizes that we're connected to all things. What does it say? The infinite love of creation connects all life, because in all life that love lies hidden. You know, it says also in the Meyer teachings that the indescribable splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation, and that creation radiates love. Now, creation is not a god. It's a universal consciousness. There really is no such thing as the god that the religions teach us. There is a universal consciousness that's also evolving. It's balanced. It's neither good nor evil. It's a spiritual energy. It has no anthropomorphic qualities. It doesn't have a personality. It doesn't become angry or jealous. Now, let me get back to love again. With the false form of love, however, factors like age and appearance and personality do play an important role, as does one's material wealth, their profession, their societal positions, and such things like this. Now, this is an emotion-based false form of love. So what are emotions? How do emotions differ from feelings? Your thoughts produce feelings. Your feelings grow from your thoughts, much like a plant. From feelings come habits, and habits lead to circumstances. So good feelings, good thoughts lead to good feelings, lead to good habits, lead to good circumstances in your life. You control the circumstances in your life. You are not the victim of circumstances. You become the victim of circumstances only to the extent that your thoughts swing wildly, or that you don't control your thoughts. Now, if you're not controlling your thoughts, it's really easy to fall into this emotion-based false form of love, which is subject to enormous fluctuations in intensity and can suffer changes and can even transform into rage and hatred. This false form of love is actually very dangerous. Billy's deeper explanations talk about these two types of love, this genuine affective love and the false affective love, serve as valuable instruction for analyzing, deepening, and translating and transforming our own personal forms of love, which we should have for our fellow human beings and all other things, which with which we share our existence. We share our existence with other creatures, plants, and animals. And the Meyer information explains, we don't live and let live. We should be living and help living. It may be easy to assume at first glance that the concept of love should be simply understood in a familiar way that's presented by our religions. But the spiritual Meyer teachings talk about love in a different way. Love is not situated in the heart and is not the power of a god. True love is a conglomerated form of fine spiritual perception called Empfindung in the German, and it is not built upon emotions because it is fine spiritual or fine fluidal perception itself. So true love comes from a fine spiritual perception of reality. I love to talk about what it says in the Goblet of Truth, where it goes on and says, rivers, stones, plants, bushes, trees, everything that crawls and flies on the earth is a life form with a spirit form. And these spirit forms are on a journey through time, which involves many, many lifetimes. And death is just the passage to rebirth, rebirth into the world of pure spirit. And many of these creatures are connected by these psychic vibrations. You see, there's a different perception that we all can have. Now, we're talking about a fine fluidal perception here. Well, the animals are connected by these psychic vibrations, and that's how they move in flocks, and they turn on a dime together. So this true love comes from a fine spiritual perception of reality. And this perception of reality comes from the respectful, concentrated observation. That's where true love comes from. It comes from perceiving at a fine spiritual level the nature of another human being or the nature of another creature. So the knowledge and the wisdom that's acquired in this way, it's acquired through kind of a meditative concentration on the reality of a thing. This results in the experience of love. However, not many of us have the ability to concentrate that way. It's rarely possessed. And it sometimes takes practice, much, much practice, for us to get to that ability, to be able to concentrate to that level. So, taking a bit of a tangent here, talking about love, and certainly nothing wrong with that. And then I went back to how it all began in the creation. I'm going to shift gears rather quickly here, I believe, because I wanted to talk about something that I haven't touched on too much again, or not for a while. And this is the whole concept of the spirit form. You know, we were talking about the spirit. We all have a human spirit. It's located in our superior colliculus. It's the part of us which lives from lifetime to lifetime. And it's associated, the spirit form has many personalities, depending on the material lifetime that it happens to be living. Now, the Meyer information identifies the previous lifetimes of Edward Albert Meyer. And if you have never listened to this show before and you don't know who Edward Albert Meyer is, he is a man in his late 70s. He lives in a tiny mountain village in Switzerland. He was born around 1937, 38, something like that. He's in his late 70s. And he has had extraterrestrial contact since about the age of 5 years old. He met with a man named Svoth for 11 years. I met a woman named Asket for 11 years. He had 11 years of no contact. Then he met with a woman named Semyase for about 5 years or so. She had a great accident. And then since then, his extraterrestrial contacts include a man named Ta and Quetzal. Now, all of these people are associated with a lineage, a series of descendants, a family tree, so to speak, that goes back to a spirit form. They refer in the Meyer material as Nokodemjan or Nokodemian. That's a very, very, very ancient spirit form, I think many billions of years old. And they kind of watch for this spirit form as it incarnates. It's incarnated on other worlds, different galaxies. And it's usually a prophet, and it's usually a teacher, and it always has really some very, very interesting things to say in each one of its lifetimes. And it has been Enoch, the person we call Enoch, who was called Henoch at the time of his lives, because there was actually three Henochs, a Henoch at about 4,500 years ago, 8,900 years ago, in about 13,500 years ago. The Book of Enoch, which we have today, has been horribly distorted from the original teachings. But we have Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad. Now, these people had different, somewhat different pronunciations to their names. And this is where I wanted to take a slight segue into the origin of the letter J and what this has to do with anything you'll see shortly. Because the Old English alphabet consisted of the following letters: A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, Q, R, S, T, V, X, Y, Z. Now, I did not say J. A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, K. Hope I didn't say J, because there was no J in the Old English alphabet. There was no W, there was no J, there was no U in the Old English. Therefore, before 1600 AD, there was no letter J in any of these writings. So important political and religious figures whose name began today with the letter J would have originally many times began with the letter I. For example, Julius Caesar originally was not spelled with a J, nor did it have a sound of J, and the same with the name Jesus Christ. Some scholars believe that words began with I were pronounced as if they had a Y. The 1611 version of the King James Bible had no J's in it, neither did the Gutenberg Bible. So that means the book of Job did not exist. It was originally called the book of Iob. And there was no Apostle John. Not originally. His name was something like Yohani. And there was no Joshua. There was a Yeshua. So the Bible had no J's in it. The letter J is the youngest letter of the alphabet. The letter J never existed until about the year 1600. And it emerged when a man named Gian Giorgio Tarissino, who lived from about 1478 to 1550, was the first to explicitly distinguish an I from a J. So he invented the J. And some scholars kind of think of that the J was actually a mistake. So does the letter J exist in the Hebrew, the Latin, or the Greek? And the answer to this question is no. The letter J never existed in any languages on earth until about 1500 or so. So the letter J does not exist in the Hebrew, the Latin, the Greek. So, for example, the Hebrew prophet of Elijah was actually known as Eliah. And Enoch was known as Hanok. So, originally, some say that there was a transliteration from Yeshua into Jesus. And a transliteration is a conversion of text from one script to another. It's not a translation. Transliteration is not concerned with representing the sounds of the original, only the letters. So, but the Masoretic material doesn't agree that Yeshua became Jesus. The Meyer information says the original name of Christ was not Yeshua, but originally Emmanuel. Der mit Gottlieb Wissen, the one with godly knowledge. And the knowledge of Anishwish is what's meant. It is one of the old traditional first names in the Ur form. In other words, it means that Emmanuel, with the letter J, is a very old name of the old Lyrians or the Vagans. Now, if you've never listened to this show before, you may not know who the Lyrians and the Vagans were. The Lyrians came to the earth about 389,000 years ago, and again about 13,500 years ago. During those times, they were very advanced extraterrestrial humans. You could call them titans. They had incredible abilities associated with their material consciousness. Sometimes they were, unfortunately, called God or gods. And they did some things that weren't so good. And there was a codex that was kind of drawn up that some of these old Lyrians would have to come back. In other words, they'd die on the earth and they would start a reincarnation process on the earth until they had kind of undone the damage that they had done. Now, this is what we call the codex, or during the time of the oath, which we referred to earlier. Now, the story of the life of Emmanuel is told in a book called The Talmud of Emmanuel. And there have been attempts to destroy the Talmud, just like the books Henoch and Jezira and others removed from the Bible, because they had been too close to the original truth that was handed down. By the end of 1990, there had been something like 13 attempts on Billy's life. Okay, have you ever noticed, if you want some more proof of what I'm trying to say here, have you ever noticed on the ancient paintings in the old, like during the 13, 14, 15, 1600s, you would see the acronym INRI over the crucifixion painting? Well, the acronym INRI means Iesus Nazarenus Rex Iodorum in the Latin, which today we read Jesus the Nazarene King of the Jews. But during the time, there was no pronunciation of the word Jesus. Now, can you imagine what else must have changed in time if they did not agree on the name of the central person in Western society? Well, the First Council of Nicaea was a council of Christian bishops, which occurred in Nicaea around 325 AD. Now, Nicaea is kind of close to the Mediterranean Sea, and it would be in a part of what we might call Turkey today. And there was this Roman Emperor Constantine who became a Christian, and he wanted to make it legal for people in Rome to become Christians. So he took up the First Council of Nicaea, and they wanted to come up with a common set of doctrines that all of Christianity in the Roman world could agree on. And unfortunately, at the time, Julius Caesar was hailed as God made manifest and the universal savior of human life. So they had some real problems to overcome. So Constantine was in charge of this whole thing in Nicaea, and they had to come up with the name, the correct name of the new God for the Roman Empire. And to involve the British factions, they come up with the Druid god Jesus, and they joined it with the Eastern savior god Krishna. Krishna is Sanskrit for Christ. Thus the name Jesus Krishna came about, that eventually, probably over time, became Jesus Christ. They actually voted on the new name, and the vast majority agreed in the new name. A new god was proclaimed and officially ratified by Constantine. There was no letter J in any of the alphabets around the world at that time. But eventually, Jesus Krishna became Jesus Christ. According to some historians, according to some theologists, the name, this Jesus Krishna, can actually be translated from the ancient Greek name, Jesus Christos, or the Anointed Son of Zeus. So there's different ideas on this. Very interesting website, Yahweh.com. If you want to, Yahweh.com will give you some interesting insights in this information. It's kind of a supplement to some of the Meyer information. So take this and decide for yourself what makes sense for you. Good or evil? What is the human nature? Goblet of Truth, another one of Billy's writings, that talks about human nature. It says, no human being is fundamentally evil because he or she is not genetically programmed by nature for Gewalt and for manipulation. The revenge and retribution and hatred and jealousy and falseness and all that sort of things, they're developed later during the course of life. Now, evil can denote a profound immorality. Evil is considered harmful or injurious. Selfishness, neglect, disturbed, unhinged, insane. The German word Bös is a word translated as evil. So we are not programmed with evil. The spirit form is not evil by default. But evil is something that comes, again, into the behavior patterns of human beings later. And these behavior patterns are highly contagious. So, and contagious, when something is contagious, it means it tends to spread from person to person. And this makes me think that our negative and destructive thoughts can resurface in others. It also makes me think that our feelings and behavior can be negatively affected by the other's thought patterns. A behavior pattern, it's a recurrent way of acting by an individual, group, or a person. So you can have unhealthy thought or behavior patterns. Let me read another section from the Goblet of Truth. And when the abyss of evil is opened, it's not seldom the case that they open so wide that a human being who has lapsed into evil can no longer find their way back to the good. See, human beings can find their way back to the good. And that's what part of this book, The Might of Thoughts, is all about. Whatever the human being intensively thinks about grows in him or her and becomes fact. So we need to make sure what we think is not evil. Because we're able to imprint bad and negative thoughts into the inner nature. And this happens when we are inattentive and not aware of them. They can penetrate into us. Hence, the human being must always be consciously concerned what is actually forming in his inner nature. You must recognize, adopt, and realize the creational impulses that come from your innermost self. The creational impulses that come from your innermost self are neutral positive. The bad and the negative can penetrate us and overcome us. So we have to be constantly on the lookout. And we all carry some bad and negative in ourselves. That's from the material consciousness. So, let me read another section from the Goblet of Truth. The brainstem responds to any conceivable and acute threat towards the consciousness of ourselves. So the unconscious reaction to acute threat prevents us from sometimes being harmed. So the unconscious is the part of the mind that is inaccessible to the mind, but affects our behavior and emotions. So we have a real challenge because we have unconscious thoughts that come from the unconscious mind. The unconscious mind consists of the part of the mind that occurs automatically, and it's not available to introspection. And it includes thought processes like memory, motivation. Empirical evidence suggests that unconscious phenomena includes repressed feelings, automatic skills, habits, automatic reactions. The behavior of an individual is able to come to be contagious to others. So we have to be very, very conscious of our own thoughts. And we need to start analyzing our own thoughts. And this is how we should think, like this. We should be thinking of creation, respect or venerability towards the entirety of nature and towards the creation and its laws and recommendations must determine the human being's thoughts and feelings and his deeds. So think about that again. So you should have respect for the entirety of nature, for the creations. And that should determine your thoughts, your feelings, and your deeds. So your respect for nature, for other creatures near you, for plants, for animals, for people, should determine your thoughts and deeds. And humans must live in harmony with nature, with Earth, in the universe, as well as all varieties of present existence that spring forth from these. What comes to my mind immediately is the way, and I'm sure where you live, you're seeing this too, the bulldozers come out and they just flatten that beautiful area that had the trees in it, and you just always enjoyed driving past that place and looking at those beautiful trees and that pond or what else was there. And boy, just as life would have it, population expands again, and the bulldozers come out, and there goes the beautiful, what was nature. And I talked about respect and the feeling of deep admiration for something. Venerability means commanding respect because of great age and dignity. And I talked earlier about rivers, stones, plants, animals, lakes, seas, brooks, the air and water, trees and bushes, and everything that crawls and flies on the earth here as being connected by these psychic swinging waves. Now we have two controlling factors in our bodies, our consciousness, so to speak. And I know I'm running out of time here. I got to watch myself. The spirit form has the gamut that controls the thoughts and the feelings of the spiritual consciousness. The psyche controls the thoughts and the feelings of the material consciousness. The gamut supplies the psyche with the harmonious swinging waves. These swinging waves are mentioned more than once in the Goblet of Truth, and I think they're an important key to understand what is going on in the human spirit. And I find it strange that the word Wesenheiten is used in the following passage, because a Wesenheiten is an immaterial or material existence form that doesn't have the same self-determining possibility of evolution that we do. And the Wesenheiten, in this case, these creatures, are able to communicate with one another. And the Wesen height is not a reason as such, but an immaterial or material form of existence without a self-determining possibility of evolution. But however, even the universal consciousness and stones and water and gases have a certain amount of self-determination. You know, the evolution of the creation is somewhat automatic. It's fairly automatic. The creation, the universal consciousness, is not a personification. Self-determination means determined by oneself or itself, without outside influence. Evolution is any process of formation or growth development. Evolution in biology means a change in the gene pool of a population from generation to generation. All of them, here, let me read again, from the Goblet of Truth. All of them are Wesenheiten that communicate with one another, all knowing about their common existence among one another. The consciousness and psyche of all created creations are in turn bound on a journey through time, incorporating very many bodily existences through the innumerable forms in which life appears. In this process, death is a passage to rebirth, as well as a conversion into the other world, the world of pure spirit. So, these lower creatures are aware of each other. They're connected to one another. And all of nature is connected into a tightly woven web of life. Now, to weave means to interlace, like threads, strips, fibrous material. It forms a material, a fabric. To interlace means to cross over one another, typically pass it alternately over and under, as if woven together, intertwined. The word there is indissoluble, which has meanings like firm, stable, incapable of being dissolved. That's the way nature is described. This is the basis for the tightly woven and indissoluble web of life. That's why we have to respect all parts of life. And in this wise, no life form strives to rise up over the others within their group and set themselves up over others, because each life form contains a basic goodness and not evil. Evil is learned and practiced as a result of inappropriate doings, in the German word Sartung. So, unfortunately, we live in a life, in a time where people don't understand what the creation is. And that's what Svath explained to Billy, that the biggest problems with the Earth human is he doesn't understand what creation is. So he does things which destroy nature. And this creates all sorts of isms in our society. Nationalism, fascism, neo-capitalism, materialism. And Billy writes about these. Irrespective of what is involved, whether it's simple or fanatical religions, sex, nationalism, fascism, politics, terrorism, neocapitalism, all of these are aberrations of negative and evil. And these are the philosophies that are driving politics on the earth right now. This is why we have continual war. A sect is a philosophical or political group. Sects are often regarded as extreme or dangerous. A fanatic often has intense, uncritical devotion. And that's what we're dealing with now. People with intense, uncritical devotion to certain ideas. Makes me think of Islam, or the terrorists of Islam. Fascism can be defined as a government system led by a dictator. We've had fascists rise, Mussolini, Hitler. You know that Hitler, by the way, in my few remaining moments here, I want to talk a little bit about Hitler, because Hitler's situation is very unusual. Because the Meyer information explains that Hitler was impulsed by the Pleiaren at a very young age, and he could have had a very, very positive influence on our life. He could have brought the world together in a very, very important way. However, the Giza intelligences, through the Thule or the Thule Society, as it's called in Germany, took Hitler down the wrong path. There was a man named Hermann Steinschneider, who was the most influential person in sending Hitler down the wrong path. And eventually Hitler became a delusional and insane, and he was impulsed by the Giza intelligences to do much of the evil that occurred during World War II. And that's why we had the aberration that occurred in World War II, where we had such a tremendous war that killed 60 million people. And we're still in the state of an aberration right now. And an aberration is the act of departing from what is normal and what is right and what is the usual course. When you think of an aberration, Hitler became an aberration. Nazism became an aberration. Our system today in the United States is an aberration. And we think of things like abnormality, eccentricity, illusion, delusion, hallucination. Our religions are somewhat aberrations today. We have left the right path in our life. But if we learn to control our thoughts, good thinking leads to good feelings. Good feelings lead to good habits. Good habits lead to good circumstances in your life. You are the master of your own life if you take the time to learn to control your thinking. Your own thinking has a tremendous power associated with it. Well, folks, I hope you've enjoyed the show this evening. This has been Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Have a good afternoon.